This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Tom and Warren on Joy.
Now, we're going to set the scene here. We're going back to 1852 Melbourne.
The year Warren was born.
No, it's just where he gets his clothes from.
I'm not the only one that's noticed. Even the guests are pointing that shit out now.
Immigrants leaving Britain bought more tickets to Melbourne this year than any other destination in the world. And they were chasing a single dream, which was gold. And apparently thousands were arriving daily. Lodging houses and hotels were packed to bursting point. And Charles Latrobe, after Latrobe Street was named after him, was our governor. The governor of Victoria.
Our very first.
And in the spring of 1852, the emigrant ship Ticonderoga, did I pronounce it right?
Sure
sailed through the heads of Port Phillip Bay after a three-month voyage from Liverpool in the UK. But it was a really horrible journey. 100 passengers apparently perished on this ship. And it was because, was it the typhus? Typhus. Mm. There was an outbreak of typhus.
No scurvy. I thought they got scurvy.
No, they'd got onto that by then. Vitamin C.
So what's typhoid?
Typhus. Typhus is a really yucky disease transferred by lice. Body lice.
So obviously there was lots of lice. So the ship wasn't allowed to dock at this chaotic Melbourne, which was full of all these immigrants, and the police were worried about civil unrest. So you can imagine what Melbourne was like
at this
time.
It was nuts at this point.
And they were told to go onto this beach in a quarantine area. And the ship's doctor was credited with saving many lives and went on to establish his own family. And Michael, you are the great-great-grandson of the ship's doctor.
And there he is. I'm holding it up in my book of the same name, the name being?
Hellship.
That's it.
I thought you were pointing to the name of the doctor.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
What was your great-great-grandfather's name?
James William Henry Veatch, the first of my clan to come out here in 1852, and he was he'd come from a long line of naval doctors, of sea doctors, and he had a very good career in front of him. His dad, my great-great-grandfather, was a real bigwig. He was he's well-known in the history books and that, being a pioneering naval surgeon. And my great-great-grandfather was his eldest son and was the kind of apple of their eye, and he got his first job as a ship's doctor and came out to Australia, but the voyage was so bloody horrific, he never went back, and he stayed here. Never stepped foot on board another boat as long as he lived.
Wow, so it was a job?
It was a job.
He was meant to be the ship's doctor, and it was that bad, he just said, I get back on that boat.
There were four boats that arrived that they commissioned much, much bigger ships to get more people on because there was such a demand to come here. Mm-hmm. And this is the fourth and last and by far the worst of what the history books classify as the plague ships. Ticonderoga was by far the worst. There were deaths on all these ships because no one knew. There was no penicillin. Everyone thought diseases were transmitted by air, so that they just didn't understand how diseases were made.
They didn't know it was the lice.
They had no idea. They didn't understand that till World War I, and even then it was another 23 years before they got onto it. But James Veatch embarked on this beautiful ship, this American-built clipper. It would have looked spectacular. A large ship, and the voyage went really, really, really pear-shaped very quickly. In fact, actually about halfway across. And the poor buggers, who were mainly all Scots from the Highlands, they were crammed on board. 800 they crammed, men and women and kids. And when the disease went through it, it went through it really badly. And as you say, when it limped into Melbourne, because the crew had started to go down and they couldn't, I should rephrase that, shouldn't I? The crew had started to get very ill and the boat was in danger of not being able to sail itself. And when it limped into Port Phillip Bay, the pilot said, mate, you're not coming to Melbourne. You're going over there to this little beach that the government's decided is going to be a quarantine area. Drop anchor, get all your people off and make them better again. We'll send help. And it was a crisis. It was a huge crisis. Wow. In fact, it was Victoria's first big crisis. Governor Latrobe was, he was really badly criticised and really nasty letters to the paper. And my great-great-grandfather was in the middle of it, really.
Yeah. So and apparently, was it another 100 died?
Nearly another 100 who wow. of the most sick. Almost half the ship's passengers were ill. 100 died on the voyage, and then another 100 died in quarantine. But then the disease started to taper off. If the voyage had lasted much longer, everyone
they all would
have
gone.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
it just would have been a ghost ship. It looked, floating.
They actually, it could have ended up just being basically an empty hulk because no one knew how to stop the disease. Really, even my great grandfather, the medical chest of a doctor in that time is bizarre. It's full of things like arrowroot and cream of tartar and all these and what's of grog, wine and gin and Madeira and things like that, but they had no real idea of what disease was.
It sounds like my granny's bloody pantry, doesn't it? Madeira cake and an arrowroot biscuit, and
some nice Keen's curry powder. dash one of these buttermilk casserole
soothers.
Now, many of us recognise you for your role in comedies such as Fast Forward, and I think of Wayne the flight attendant.
You would bring that up, wouldn't you?
You
would.
You played with Steve Vizard, and also was it Steve Vizard you played with?
It doesn't ring a bell.
Never heard of that man, have you?
And Kelvin, I've forgotten Kelvin's last name. That's right. Kelvin would have
I haven't done that on radio for a while.
You'd have a ball with Tom here, Kelvin would be laughing the whole time.
No.
What? Are you saying that Tom's a bit immature and has a kind of a puerile sense of humour?
No, I'd never say that.
You sit there in front of your microphone.
This is the best guest we've ever had. Shut up. Soldered your clothing. Now pick on his height. That's a real soft spot.
Yeah, but he's so well toned. Look at those arms. He's got bloody, he's got bad boys there. Look at that.
You think those guns are look at the titties he's got.
You've also published books on the Second World War, Marine Science and the Islands of Bass Strait.
That's right.
What prompted you to transition from comedy to history and storytelling?
Oh, because no one would give me a job in comedy, you see, so I had to do something. Look, I've always been a writer. My dad was a writer, my mum was a writer, and I've always had an interest in, World War II planes and the blokes who flew them. And so I wrote 4 books of just interviews with them, then another couple of books on an aspect of World War II aviation. One was called 44 Days, about the 6-week gallant Australian defence of Port Moresby, just one little squadron fighting off the Japs before the Americans turned up. Mm. And then a book about a young airman who was shot down and joined the French Resistance. This kid from Sydney became part of the French Resistance for 8 months in 1944. Incredible story. And this is the one following bit, but this is quite a personal story. Hellship's quite a personal story because it involves my family. But it's also a really big part of Victoria's history that's sort of been forgotten about. Mm. I mean, as I said, going through the papers of that time, and the letters to the editor are so nasty and so visceral about this incompetent, stupid government making all these people come out on sick ships, and now they're all dead, and they're our friends and our family, and we need these people here, because Victoria was desperate for people at this stage. And it just sort of wrote itself, really.
Doesn't
and
it show you the world hasn't changed much?
No, I know.
Obviously, we're still whinging about people arriving on boats and bringing diseases and carrying on.
Can you read the dedication, please?
To the boat people from every land and every era. Well done. This book here, you've talked about the other books, and this book is a very personal story about your family. Is this the first time you've actually looked into your family history write about?
Anecdotally, in a couple of other books, I've sort of strayed into it a bit. But, absolutely, this is the first it's the first book that's ever been written on the topic of the Ticonderoga. That's actually not true. There's another little book written by a woman called Mary Krutoff, which is very good, and she's another descendant, but it was privately published and not many people know about it, even though it's very good. It's called Fever Beach. It's a really good book. But this is the first widely published story, and it's sort of a fusion of my own story and a bigger story as well. So it's really kind of personal, because my dad told me this story, but he should have written about it, but he never got around to doing it before he died. So I've sort of taken up the mantle, really, and I'm doing it on stage too.
Michael, there's been some research recently about that we inherit trauma from our ancestors and their experiences. Did you learn anything about yourself and your behaviours that may have been shaped by your family history? Like, have you thought?
I get seasick really, really. really easily, and I don't like boats very much. I actually do love boats. I just don't like being on small ones.
I'm the same. I like looking at them. They're beautiful. Yeah, I like standing on the dock, watching it go. I don't put me on that thing.
I can get seasick looking at a model boat in a glass cabinet. That's how seasick
I've been seasick on the Manly Ferry.
Oh, yeah, that, like, well, I mean, that's that's quite acceptable. The Manly Ferry can get... It wasn't even that rough.
Yeah.
The worst one is the hydrofoil. Oh,
oh yeah,
it has that undulating up and down, and it's not really intense, but it's just enough to kind of throw me into it. I'm gonna be over the side.
I get that as well.
So have you met new family members? Like while you're researching,
many people have come out of the woodwork. I'm a descendant of this ship because 600 or so people survived and went on to, you know, form families in Australia that are still going strong today, because I've been touring it as a stage show where I play my great-great-grandfather on stage, and so many people are coming out of the woodwork saying, oh, I heard about this, and I didn't know anybody knew this story. It's always been in our family, and we're really glad you're doing it. So it's been really delightful. In fact, a couple of the passages I talk about in the show, in particular the Handos, a girl, Hando, like a 16-year-old girl called Anna Marie Hando, was the first adult victim of Ticonderoga. And all the Handos came the other night. There were about 10 of them.
Wow.
And then there's this amazing story of one of the other, this young boy, Christopher McRae. He walked. He said, I'm bugger this beach business. He actually walked to Coburg from Point Nepean, which was where the quarantine station was. 60 miles it was in 1852, and walked to his relative's house that he had it on an address written on a piece of paper, and told him, oh, I'm the cousin of your cousin and I'm the son of your cousin who is my mother, and she's died. And all the McRae's turned up the other night for a show that I was doing. It's really good.
Now, Michael, I don't remember...
I'm talking too much, sorry.
No, it's interesting. I don't remember hearing about Hellship at all in history. So
no.
How does it feel reviving a story that, you know, potentially could have been lost over time?
Yeah. Well, it more or less had been lost. It's kind of a responsibility, because you're sort of putting something out there that you're saying, look, this is a new story, and not many people have got a chance to sort of cross-reference it. They have to take my word for it. But that's why with this one, I had quite extensive notes, so I had to be quite scholarly about this one and get my... publisher Alan and Unwin did a really good job of whipping my ass and making sure that I fact-checked and crossed every T and
because we love to point out mistakes, don't we?
Well, I could have just made it up. I could have just pulled it out of my bum and just put it up there, but, you know, people would have got a bit cross.
I mean, when you think about history, it's full of many lesser-known stories. You know, how important is it that we actually probably start getting our grandparents, our parents, or ourselves starting to write this stuff down? It's going to be lost.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is why my other books are talking to old guys that flew planes in World War II and had amazing adventures in their youth, and they die and don't tell anybody about them and goes to the grave. Look, I just like stories. I mean, I don't, you know, I don't sort of carry the weight of history with me. I just like stories, and I like telling them, and I like hearing them.
And
so,
you're a great storyteller too.
Oh, thank you.
You've called your family story the Hellship Project.
Yes.
So you've got a book, a play, and an album.
And an album. Oh, yeah.
As well. Can you tell us about each of these, why you've chosen such a multi-layered approach?
Well, the album part we've kept in the family because my son Thomas is a really good cellist, and he's arranged and composed this music that we use in the play. So it's sort of been, it's all in the family, if you like. The reason I'm doing a play, which is in the middle of a Victorian tour at the moment, is because I do acting as well, and I thought, look, I may as well squeeze every bloody buck I can out of it. But it was more than that. I mean, it is what I do, and I like doing it.
And it's what we like coming to see you do.
Thank you very much.
You're an entertainer, and we come to hear you tell a story.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. You know. No, thank you. And look, and it's a grisly story, but it's the romantic element is that the doctor, and this is him, a photo, I'm holding up a photo of the book, and that's my great-great-grandfather. That's my great-great-grandmother. She was a passenger on the ship as a single immigrating female coming out from Scotland looking for a job here, and they kind of hooked up. on the ship, and she was his nurse because there was no one to help him. And she was amazing, this woman, and helped people on the ship and helped in quarantine as well. And they married a few weeks later after arriving and started the Veitch this branch anyway of the Veitch family. So there is a happy ending to this story as well.
Yes.
And look at me. And it's me. And I'm sitting here.
You can catch Michael all over Victoria.
That's right.
Tonight in Drysdale, you're going to be playing.
That's just near Geelong.
We're going to put the link up on our Facebook page. Andy's going to put that up shortly. So
there's a CD and an EP, which I'm going to put in your hot little hand because my partner has just whacked me. Thank you, Brooke, over my text. You forgot to give them the EP!
And I believe...
Exclamation mark, exclamation
there's
mark.
Only there's only 200, couple, isn't there? There's a, it's a quite limited, the EP.
Limited edition, but we've got the CD LP out at the moment too.
Okay.
And that's beautiful music. It's stunning. So if you feel like playing a little track of that later, you'd be my friends for life.
We are the boss here. There's no one arrived yet.
Oh, good.
We'll put the link up on our Facebook page. Search for Tom and Warren on Joy. Don't forget, the book Hellship is available now along with the LP.
Yes.
Michael Veitch, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much, guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks for chatting with us on Joy.
Wake up with Tom and Warren, Thursdays for breakfast on Joy. Tune in to 94.9 in Melbourne. Stream live at joy.org.au or download the Joy app. Available via podcast at joy.org.au, on iTunes or your favourite podcasting platform. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.